to all my friends is that all of my issues, it's a me, Mario. Woohoo! Mamma mia! You guys, you're number one. Woohoo! Are you number one? Ho ho! Wait a second, bro. Here we go. Woohoo!
Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of All of My Issues. In this episode, episode 24, we are going to talk about the top side characters in film and TV. But before we get into that, let's talk about Geek Fuel. If you're anything like us, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. You enjoy geeky things, and one of the best ways to get your monthly geek on is to subscribe to Geek Fuel. Geek Fuel will send you a box monthly filled with comic book, gaming, sci-fi, and pop culture related material. Right now, if you go to our website, allofmyissues.com, and click the Geek Fuel link, you can save $3 off of your Geek Fuel subscription. All right, so let's get started. Hello, Internet. I'm Rick.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right, on today's episode, we're going to talk about the top side characters, or most awesome side characters, or secondary characters in TV, movies, comic books, and cartoons, and some toys as well, I guess, but they may also appear in cartoons.
There you go.
All right, so I guess we'll get started.
All right, my number five side character comes from the DC Universe, and his name is Max Mercury. Those of you who are familiar with the Flash books, you are familiar with Max Mercury. He is a speedster in the DC Universe. He first made an appearance in comics in 1940, and the comic was called the National Comic. And so basically the Flash family, you know, Wally West and Jay Garrick, they regard him as the Zen master of speed, because he was the character, the person who basically studied and knew about the Speed Force and tried to, you know, understand the Speed Force first, and he was like a mentor to Wally West. Now, since, you know, the CW has the Flash television show, probably more than likely he may be making an appearance there in the future. It's going to be interesting, because I have a feeling that I don't think Barry Allen and Max Mercury like really crossed paths. I remember him more of being Wally's mentor and him dealing with Wally. So I just figured that he was kind of a cool guy, and you don't really know too much of his past. In the comics, he right now is missing in the Speed Force. Before the new 52 came out for DC, he was missing, and his spirit is somewhere in the Speed Force. His body was last seen being taken over by another Flash villain rival, but the last time we actually seen Max Mercury was the Final Crisis, when all the Flashes were taking Superboy Prime into the Speed Force. So we will see what the future holds. So that is my number five.
I don't know much about him. I know what he looks like, yep. And I've seen him in a couple of issues here and there, but I don't really know much about him. I did read that he used to be called something to do with Quicksilver.
Yes.
And they changed his name whenever they brought him back.
Yeah. Yeah, he used to be like, to avoid Quicksilver. Confusion. Yeah. But yeah, I think like the first time that I seen him was basically like the Wally West Flash run. And it was basically kind of around the time of Impulse and the whole Quick and the Dead storyline. Mm. So that was the time that I know about Max Mercury.
I don't really know too much about the character either, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they do incorporate him into the show.
Yeah.
So maybe like in another Earth.
Yeah.
They haven't visited yet.
Yeah. Because Wally still is kind of Barry is still learning about the Speed Force and everything. So, hopefully he'll show up, and be a Zen master.
Yeah, to Zen master of the Speed Force. So. I like it.
That's my number five.
All right.
All right. My number five, I'm going big with my number five. I'm getting this out of the way. Just because otherwise this character would be looming throughout the rest of the podcast waiting for someone to say it. Boba Fett.
Yes!
Boba Fett.
Boba Fett from, obviously, well, we'll say The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi predominantly.
Yeah.
Though I hear special editions exist where he showed up in A New Hope as well. But regardless, made his first appearance, actually September 20th, 1978, at the San Anselmo County Fair. There was a parade.
Oh, where they, man. See, and I thought you were going to go.
So with a Star Wars holiday special.
Yes, that's where I thought you were going.
The first place I remember him from.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they had an awesome little cartoon in there. It was the only redeemable portion of that entire debacle.
You don't like B. Arthur?
Oh, I love B. Arthur.
Just not in the holiday Star Wars holiday special.
Well, it's when B. Arthur sings that I begin to lose.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Have you seen...
It was a long time ago.
Oh, so bad. Yeah, I watched it the one time that it aired on TV. I watched it then, and since then I've watched it a couple times.
I tried to introduce it to my son because I was trying to explain it to him, and we didn't get very far into it before he was just like, I don't want to watch this, Dad. So I was like, okay, let me stop it now.
Some other fun facts. His armor comes from original concepts for Darth Vader. Was based on some of the original ones. And then another fun fact, he was originally planned to be the main villain of Return of the Jedi.
Ooh,
interesting.
Lucas was originally planning to do six, got tired of the process, and decided to cut those six down to three and skip straight to the final thing. And at that time, you know, originally he was going to be the main villain trying to get hand back from him, but instead they skipped it right over and went straight to Jabba the Hutt.
Okay.
He was just... amazing to watch because, you know, Darth Vader stops that first time that he sees him and turns to him and says, "No disintegrations."
Exactly.
And that immediately made him, out of all the bounty hunters, which I always thought all of the bounty hunters looked cool.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
But immediately, despite the fact that he was the one that actually went, you know what, I'm going to hide in the trash and find him. Beyond that, he just was the coolest. I remember mailed away for the figure.
Before
it was a special mail away, I was promised the one with the jet. Yeah, and then when it, you know, it came with a little note saying that they weren't going to do that anymore because of choking hazard, which made me sad. Yeah. But he was just, I mean, you had an entire, you knew nothing about him, and so he was just this mystery, and you build him up in your mind, and even the prequels couldn't completely ruin Boba Fett's mystique, though they tried.
They tried really hard. Yeah,
yeah.
Introduction of Jango Fett. And seeing a young Boba Fett. We never really wanted to see young Boba Fett. But we got that, and I don't know.
But, you know, I think, you know, the Clone Wars, the animated series, I think they kind of made up for it, because there was a scene with young, there was an episode with young Boba Fett, and you're like, okay, this could have if they would have done it right in the movies, this could have gone very well.
Yeah.
Because he was the League of Hitmen and Assassins, and I remember that episode. So,
how can the animated series, all those just hit it way out of the park, so much further than any of the prequel movies? How is that possible?
I have a theory of why that it would be. Because Star Wars was awesome, the original New Hope, because George Lucas made it to his vision, and then other people took it and edited it into a completely different way. If you look up the editing of Star Wars, took forever. And then from that point on, it was George Lucas writes out the script, they give it to a director, they change some things here and there, and then the director makes it their vision of George Lucas's idea.
Which is
awesome. So if you look where George Lucas comes up with the idea, and isn't so much writing the screenplay, but comes up with the idea, they're awesome. The Indiana Jones movies, all three of them.
I guess there's not too much else to say as far as that goes. I mean, Howard the Duck was great, though.
Well, but that's not an original property, right?
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
I thought Willow was pretty cool. It wasn't necessary. Yeah. I mean, if you had modern day special effects and you remade Willow, it would be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty sweet.
Willow's probably
ripe for a remake.
Probably, because I can't remember the last time I've ever heard mention of Willow, other than to make fun of people.
Willow, that is true.
Mad Mardigan.
Mad Mardigan.
Well,
he could have probably went on this list.
So, I guess that's all I have to say about it. I could probably do a whole podcast just on how awesome Boba Fett is, but
He's like, and I think you nailed it with the mystique that he had, you know, like not seeing his face.
A little sad the way he went out in Return of the Jedi. And I know the expanded universe has him crawling out and whatever.
Yeah,
and
like the Mandalorian armor protected him.
But be that as it may, he was awesome.
And I think that was like the first time like a character that you really didn't know nothing about, even after... You know, Return of the Jedi, you were like, Boba Fett was so cool.
He really didn't do anything. Yeah, exactly.
We were like, oh, this dude's so cool. Everybody wanted to be Boba Fett.
That's right,
That was what I was hoping they would get out of Captain Phasma in the new one. And I mean, I guess there's still time.
Because I thought there would be a lot more of her in Force Awakens. You know, but like you said, there's still time.
There's still time to make her awesome.
Yep. Definitely. I guess that brings us to my number five. And my number five, basically the reason why I selected this character is not so much because of the things that he's been in, like as far as cartoons go, or movies or TV. He was in the Masters of the Universe cartoon, though.
Okay.
I don't think he ever played a really fundamental role in the cartoon or anything like that. But, I always thought the toy was really cool, and it's probably one of my favorite Masters of the Universe toys. And the character I'm talking about is Roboto.
Oh.
So he was one of the only robots that I'm aware of that was in the Masters of the Universe series. And what made him cool was that his body, his torso, was clear plastic, and he had gears in there. So when you turned his body, you could see the gears move, and he had a detachable hand, and he just looked really cool.
So he was like the robotic slim good body.
He was of like the Masters of the Universe. This is very true. This is very true. So, you know, just seeing those gears moving, you're like, oh, this is so cool. You know, but beyond that, beyond the toy itself, not a whole lot of backstory to that character. He's pretty simple. I think the story is something he came from outer space or something like that, crashed on Eternia, and was found by Man-at-Arms and He-Man.
Yeah.
And that's how he got introduced into the Masters of the Universe. And as far as I know, I think that's the end of it. So there's no other plot about that character. Maybe there's some fan fiction or something else.
I almost can guarantee there's fan fiction.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Probably involving Ram Man and Fisto.
Yes. I can see that coming. Whoa!
Because he's clear. Oh.
Oh my. Yeah, so Roboto. And if you look him up on the internet, there's also a font named Roboto that I came across, so you might want to specify Masters of the Universe Roboto.
There you go.
To get what we're talking about.
Hilarious.
Yes.
All right, I'm gonna go with my number four.
All right, let's pervert this.
Nope, number four.
Number four.
This is from an anime. This character's from an anime. His name is so good that you gotta say it twice. It is Ninja Ninja from Afro Samurai. Now, if you never, you don't know who Afro Samurai is. Afro Samurai is. It's a black samurai master who is voiced by none other than Samuel L. Jackson. His quest is, in their universe, to become the number one fighter. There's different bandanas. And to be the greatest fighter in the land, you have the number one bandana. And in order to fight the number one, the person with the number one bandana, you have to have the number two bandana. So only the number two bandana can challenge the person who has the number
which
one.
Which bandana? The number two?
Number
the
two.
The number two.
Is it brown?
It is. Sometimes it's red. Sometimes it could be brown, depending on where the fight is.
and your diet. Okay.
And your diet. Exactly. Yeah. As long as you don't use it to wipe anything. So it's okay. So where Ninja Ninja comes in is... Afro Samurai, the main character, what happens is an enemy comes and kills Afro Samurai's master and his best friend, and all of a sudden Ninja Ninja shows up. Now, throughout the whole series, you don't really know what Ninja Ninja is. You don't know if he is just the ghost of a past friend, or just Afro Samurai's, you know, kind of more talkative personality half, because basically only Afro Samurai can see and talk to Ninja Ninja. Now, Ninja Ninja is also voiced by Samuel L. Jackson also. And they are two opposites, because Afro Samurai is not much of a talker. He's more of the wind.
I've only seen a couple episodes, but Ninja Ninja is pretty raunchy, isn't
it? Yeah, Ninja Ninja is pretty raunchy. Yeah. Ninja Ninja is to Afro Samurai as Luther is to Barack Obama. So what Ninja Ninja, what Afro Samurai doesn't say, Ninja Ninja will say, like, what are you talking about? You need to cut this guy in half. Come on, Afro Samurai. You need to get up. And so, you know, he's more basically the motivation that gets Afro Samurai to do things when he's like, in trouble. Like when Afro Samurai is kind of getting beat up, Ninja Ninja's like, hey Afro, you need to get up and beat this guy. And so then the Afro Samurai goes and beat this guy. So if you gotta check out the series, Afro Samurai, great anime, some great voice work from Samuel Jackson. Ron Perlman is the main bad guy. His name is Justice. You got Phil Lamar, Lucy Liu, and others. Great. There's two movies. There's a series and two movies. So check it out. Ninja Ninja is my number four.
I like it. I don't know a lot about the characters either.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've seen a couple episodes, and what I saw was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It was on Adult Swim at night.
It was on Adult Swim at night, yep. And
I've seen a couple episodes too, but, you know, having a... having a kid and watching Adult Swim is kind of hard.
Yeah.
All right. My number four is a comic book character. He's from the Corbinite race, and his name is Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
His first appearance was in Thor 337, created by Walt Simonson, drawn and I believe written as well. And why he's my favorite is, first off, I always loved, for I don't know what reason, I love the look of him.
He is a cool,
he's just a cool looking character. I at one point had a Beta Ray Bill action figure, and I think someone might have stolen it, which ticks me off.
No.
But anyway, he was the first non-Norse pantheon person or alien being to wield Mjolnir. He was introduced to look monstrous and then turn out to be a good guy. So the way he was introduced, and I'm going to butcher this because it's been a while, but he was in a like suspended animation, and his ship was coming somewhere near Earth, and they sent, the Avengers I think sent Thor over to check it out, and the ship saw Thor and thought it was a threat. So it woke up Beta Ray Bill, and they began fighting, and I believe he knocked Thor out.
Oh, wow.
And then picked up Mjolnir, and it gave him the suit. So not only was he able to pick it up, but it gave him the entire Thor outfit. So Odin finds out what happened and decides the only way to solve this is to have them battle to the death.
Ooh.
And during the battle, again... Thor gets knocked out and is going to die, and Beta Ray Bill saves him. So they determined that Beta Ray Bill was kind of the winner, but it wasn't to the death, so Odin decides to take the same materials and give him his own hammer. Yeah. And it's called Stormbreaker.
A cool name for the hammer, too.
Yeah, it is, right? A cool name.
Yeah. But I question this. Like, imagine your kid goes to school and gets into a fight at school and gets knocked out, and you're like, well, I can't decide whether or not I want you to be my son anymore. Why don't you both come over here and fight to the death for me? I feel it's a little extreme.
Yeah. Maybe not the best parenting.
Tough love.
Yeah. Tough love, yeah.
I can't see that happening. That's kind
of... Oh, did you just make a one-eyed joke about Odin?
Yeah. Now, Beta Ray Bill, he is a cool character. I like him, too. I think I like the look of him, too. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Like, he looks just like Thor, but he's got a horse skull for a head.
Yeah, it's so weird. But awesome, too, for some reason. So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, so I've got an affinity for Beta Ray Bill.
It's completely understandable.
All right.
All right, I guess that brings us to my number 4, which is a character... also from a cartoon, but he's been in cartoon movies as well, but also a toy.
A threefer,
yeah. If you will. Generation 1 Transformer. And that character is Soundwave.
Ah.
Yes, indeed. The first time I saw the character on the cartoon, you gotta love his voice. He's got that... you know, the electronic sounding
Frank voice. Welker voice.
Yeah, and it just, it's just awesome.
Yeah, that's a weird noise.
I don't even know how to, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how to imitate that. I'll find some sound clip online. Maybe incorporate it in. But, that the sound itself was awesome. He transforms into cassette player. I mean, that's cool, too.
Yeah.
Not only was he one Transformer, but when Soundwave showed up at a battle... he brought an army with him.
That's
he brought
right.
friends.
Yeah, he brought friends. He had a bunch of cassette
Frenzy,
tapes.
Right?
Frenzy. Exactly. Something. Frenzy.
Ravage.
Ravage was the panther.
Yeah, right? Ravage was the panther.
That's a sweet one.
Laserbeak. Yeah.
Laserbeak.
And later on, there was other ones that were introduced as well, like Ratbat.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
I did not.
Yeah, it was one of the later ones, just towards the end, I think. I don't even know if he ever actually made it onto the cartoon, to be honest with you. There was Slugfest and Overkill. But, it just, growing up in the 80s and stuff, having a cassette player that transformed into a robot, pretty awesome.
Yeah. It was a cool design in general.
It was, yeah. And as far as, like... because one of the things I think with the Transformers in general, like, sometimes, their transformed form was cool, and then maybe their robot form was, it's okay. But with Soundwave, both forms were awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well designed.
One that wasn't was, what's the name? The Ambulance. I forget the name, but it looked pretty awful as a Transformer.
Yeah, it did, yeah. What the heck was his name? Oh, we're sounding like horrible Transformers fans right here. But and he was the communications officer for the Decepticons as well, which kind of makes sense because he's got, the sound and all that kind of stuff. Always probably the most reliable soldier that Megatron had.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also have a Transformer on my list, so I don't want to go into too much detail right now.
Yes.
About my Transformer love.
Okay. We'll save the Transformer love for later.
Was it Ratchet?
It was Ratchet. I believe, yes.
Yes.
I believe that is correct. Thank you, Sam, for saving the day on that one. Yeah.
Wait, so. Which one was Scatman Crothers? On the cartoon.
That was Jazz.
I loved hearing his voice.
Jazz, too. He was cool looking, too.
The first time I saw The Shining, I was like, oh, hey, look at that guy.
It's Jazz.
No, Chaz, don't take an axe to the chest.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, man.
Ugh. All right. Going on number three.
Number three.
Trace. My number three is a she.
Ooh.
And she is referred to as the Slayer. No, not Buffy. We're talking about Faith.
Gotta have Faith.
You gotta have Faith. Faith from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Sorry, we're just doing
I was doing a George Michael dance. The snapping finger dance, not the shaking my rear end in tight jeans. Yeah. That'll come later to Transformer love.
There you go. But Faith is my number three. I referred to her as, I referred to her as the Rock'em Sock'em Slayer, because she always liked to say, "I Rock'em Sock'em," you know, and
5x5.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it means, but yes, exactly. 5x5.
You know what it means? It took me forever to figure it out.
What is this?
5x5. That's a square. How are you? I'm square.
There you go.
There you go. Man.
I'm assuming that's what it means. That's my interpretation. Yeah. So I probably know.
It's the most.
For all I know, 25 is the perfect number, and that's. Yeah.
I mean, that's the most logical answer I've heard about that. Yeah.
Rock'em Sock'em.
Yeah, Rock'em Sock'em.
But Faith was played by actress Eliza Dushku.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hello. it was always. You never knew what Faith's last name was. And you really didn't know where she came from. It was just all of a sudden like, hey, I'm showing up at Sunnydale and I'm the new Slayer. Which, I mean...
It's that mystery.
It's that mystery. And yeah, you can understand where she was kind of feeling kind of left out, because she's like, yo, I'm here doing my job, you know, killing vamps. And you guys are still on Buffy. You're like, I'm the Slayer. So I've always wanted to see more of Faith. There's a lot of...
I think we all did.
I think we all did.
there's probably fan fiction.
I'm sure there is.
And without the comic...
Probably involving Mr. Pointy. I'm a big Buffy fan.
Yeah.
And Mr. Pointy. And so I know it was a time where Faith had like her own comic for a little bit there, and you know, her character did go on to Angel and back to Buffy for their seasons and everything, and she was always just a cool character. I when I was doing a little bit of the research, they had offered to do a spinoff of a Faith spinoff, but. Eliza wanted to do other things, so she didn't
like Dollhouse.
And Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I always had a thing for Faith, just like everyone else here, because you know her character does like the brothers. So hey, I had a shot. So that's my number three.
Here you go.
All right. My number three, we're going to head back to Eternia and the Masters of the Universe. My number three side character was Trapjaw.
Yeah.
I always thought he was one of the coolest looking one of the coolest looking Masters of the Universe, with his purple metal jaw. And I remembered him with green skin, but I think that's just because of the cartoon. Because when I was looking up the toy had blue skin.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for the head, the face was green and the body was blue, which doesn't make any sense. But regardless, the Masters of the Universe line did not make sense ever.
Yeah.
It was a series created just to sell toys.
Yeah, and that's for sure. Yeah.
They didn't. But so then whenever you buy the figures, they would come with this little mini comic. And reading the mini comic, and I reread it today in preparation for this, the Trapjaw backstory is Skeletor was trying to break into Castle Grayskull, as he always did, because there was power inside of Castle Grayskull. So he's trying to, and the magic keeps him out, and he's trying, and he's like, well, you know what? I know there are other dimensions. I am going to try to create a portal to another dimension, walk forward, and then I'll create another one, you know, whatever. So he ends up in a very close dimension where you can still see a almost transparent Castle Grayskull. He's like, oh, this is going to take
a whole lot
longer than I thought. And so he's working on getting the transparent Castle Grayskull's door open. And along comes Trapjaw, who is on the run from the law in that dimension. And in so doing, he runs into Skeletor, sending him back through the first portal, and tries to fight off the law, and falls through the second portal. So he ends up inside Castle Grayskull, and then he has the power of Grayskull. And so he comes out and just starts laying waste, and the King of Eternia sends He-Man and some other people over there, and with the power of Grayskull, he had the power.
Wow.
He had the power.
So much. There was like almost an umbilical cord of power to him. And he fought off He-Man and Skeletor and everybody. He was just destroying all. And the only way they were able to defeat him was He-Man and Skeletor combined the sword together.
Oh, I totally remember this now. Yeah.
And fought together. And broke the umbilical cord, which cut off his power and knocked him out.
I totally do remember this.
And then Skeletor was like, tries to get in, and they stop him at the last minute. And well, actually, the castle itself just pops up back open. He's like, Kartaz, and he grabs Trapjaw, and he's like, well, at least I have this buffoon will become one of my servants, which makes me think then. That the army that he has of villains were not necessarily fighting of their own will. Because there's no way Trapjaw was going to wake up and be like, well, you know what? I'm going to fight for you, Skeletor, because you teamed up with someone else. And so I can only assume.
Well, they did have Evil Lyn, so, you know.
Evil Lyn could make a man bad.
That's probably true. But you just brought up a thing, though, about the whole Masters of the Universe toy line that had always, like, I wondered why they never incorporated into the show at all, is the combining of the swords.
Yeah.
Because that was always a thing, you know, and you could take Skeletor's sword, which never really made an appearance on the show, as I recall, because he always just had the staff.
Yeah.
But take his sword and He-Man's sword and combine them together, then...
Was there ever, I thought there was maybe one special episode when they had to do that.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't remember that playing the heavy part, though, in the show.
Yeah, not like real heavy, but I think as kids we all knew that Skeletor and He-Man's sword was somewhat like interchangeable.
They could be combined together.
And this is the bad thing, as an adult, when you go back and see these things that you loved as a kid and that you realize that they weren't that good, but you're watching... but with the He-Man's stuff... there's not clear defined purpose for any of those characters. Like, it was always very vague. I want to be into Castle Grayskull. Well, why? Well,
because
magic, you know? And
I remember, like, the first time I saw Castle Grayskull, that's a giant skull castle. Skeletor's got to live there. But no.
Skeletor had a big snake castle. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. And I understand they're masters of the universe. But they clearly aren't coming to Earth, except in the movie. But there, you never see any gyms on Eternia. And they are all massive.
Crazy ripped,
all of them are crazy massive. And why...
Maybe gravity's different there, and they're gonna...
I'm thinking logic. What kind of evolutionary track does your planet have to take in order to have all these different species of man? Like Birdman and Beastman and Merman and I don't...
That's a good point.
Like, that's just crazy.
Yeah, like a whole other intelligent life on that
Snake
planet
man.
Went crazy. Went all different routes.
Manny Faces.
Yeah, Manny Faces, yeah.
Fisto.
Yeah.
Stuff. What in your evolution causes your...
I mean...
Triclops.
Yeah,
Triclops.
Yeah, it's true.
Ladies love the Fisto.
Ladies love the Fisto. Yeah. There was another one too. I'm trying to think of his name.
Do you like Satan? Because I'm about to show you Mephisto.
Oh,
dad jokes, dirty dad jokes.
Oh man, but there was Fisto, but then there was another one too that had he was the villain that had like a gold karate chop. And I'm trying to think of what his name is. Do you guys, and it just came up in my mind for some reason where I'm like. A giant hand. I'm like, oh yeah, there was. I can't remember because he was like kind of like a samurai looking dude.
Yes.
Was he
a bad guy?
I think he was a bad guy. I think
we need to take a moment to talk about some of these character names too.
Yeah, because the characters are really man at arms.
Man at arms.
You know.
I always liked. Was it Stridor? Was that
Stridor? Yeah, but he was never really on the cartoon either. Really, it's too much. I don't think was he.
Was he the long neck guy?
No, he was the guy flew.
Oh yeah,
he was on her, but I don't think
he was like
a
bird man.
Yeah,
with like this sweet ass beard.
Yeah, he did. He made goatees cool.
Man at arms, Tila. Nothing too crazy. Stratos.
Yeah. Stratos, that's what it was. Name. Stratos. Yep.
Zodak. Manny faces.
Yep.
Ram man.
He was one of the first characters that kind of diverged from that basic mold of the bodies where they were like, you know, basically the same bodies, just different colors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different head.
Different head. There you go. Hey, look, that's all the character. Yeah, Orko. Yeah.
Buzz Off.
Yeah, but that's when it kind of went a really weird route there for a while. Moss Man, where
Mechaneck.
Funny. Mechaneck. Yeah.
Fisto.
Wasn't there a...
Stridor was Fisto's heroic armored warhorse.
Oh. I did not even know that Fisto had an armored warhorse.
There was Cyclone.
Yo, he'd spin around.
Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
Roboto. Oh, man, they got a background on here.
Oh, do they?
Designed and built by Man-at-Arms as a chess-playing robot who upgrades his body and his knowledge database into that of a fighter.
Oh, yeah. So there must be...
Moss Man... Yeah.
Moss Man was...
Snout Spout.
That's when it got really kind of strange. Extendar. Yeah.
This is where I start. I don't know the rest.
They got Hordak. The Sorceress. Because then they had the whole other...
Yeah.
These were all good guys.
Oh, okay.
King Randor. Let's go into some of the old villains.
Beast Man.
I remember
Beast
Man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Merman.
Yeah. Skunk Man.
Yeah, Skunkor.
Skunkor.
Yeah. See, so we got Skeletor, obviously. Panthor, which is his evil feline companions, kind of like the battle cat.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Beast Man, Merman, which on the cartoon I loved because he just talked like this.
Yes, yeah.
Evil Inn, Triclops, Trapjaw, we talked about, obviously. I do not remember Faker.
Evil
duplicate of He-Man?
Yes, blue. He was like a blue He-Man.
Now I remember him.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, blue He-Man.
The bizarro He-Man.
Yeah, and that was like, you know, at least like with a lot of the other characters, they changed the heads to make them, hey, this is a whole different character. This one, they just changed his color. No, this is a different character. No, he's totally different color.
Jitsu?
That's who it was, Jitsu.
Ah.
That's it.
Okay, so this is awesome. His right hand, which has the ability to smash through things, is gold rather than flesh. He has no character development. He's not used in the series again, even when the toy figure was released in 1984, since the creators of the cartoon feared he would be seen as a racist stereotype to Asians.
Yeah,
I could totally see that. I did not see it as a fourth grader or whatever Night Stalker, Whiplash, Clawful?
Oh, I remember the big claw.
Crab?
Crab dude, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Web Store.
I remember Web Store too. Yeah, he was like a had like a grappling hook on his backpack, and you could
Screech.
Climb up stuff. Screech. I don't remember that.
That's a barbaric bird that spies for Skeletor.
Oh, I think maybe I do kind of remember that. Yeah.
Too Bad.
Oh, yeah.
It has two heads?
Two heads, yeah.
I thought he was called something else.
Yeah, no.
Too bad.
Spike Ore, Stink Ore. Ninjor. I don't really remember about Ninjor.
I forgot Ninjor, too, yeah.
I don't remember Scareglow at all.
Oh, I do remember Scareglow, too. Man, these are...
I don't remember.
It was like a skeleton-looking body, and it's the skeleton... He had the normal Masters of the Universe body frame, but then there was like a skeleton outline on it, and the skeleton outline glowed in the dark.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember him.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember him.
I didn't collect Masters of the Universe for very long. It was mostly the first one or two runs of them.
Yeah.
Like Trapjaw, I think, might have been second wave because I remember him coming out. Or second or third wave, I don't know what.
I think it was probably second wave.
So, I do not know enough about them to know which characters or which waves, but...
I end up knowing a lot more about Masters of the Universe than I realized.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. It's a little scary.
Near encyclopedic knowledge of characters based on their names.
Oh, yeah, that's the...
All right, so Trapjaw.
There you go, Trapjaw.
That was my number tray.
I like it. All right, I guess that brings us to... My number three.
Segue.
Yeah, that's a good segue that we have going on here. We're getting this podcast thing down. My number three is also from a cartoon. He's also been in comic books. I don't think he's been in a movie yet, but I haven't seen any of the G.I. Joe movies yet.
Okay.
Mostly because I've heard that they were pretty bad, but I haven't seen
any of
them.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Yeah, they're pretty bad in general, yeah. The character I'm talking about is a master of disguise. And the character I'm talking about is Zartan.
Oh, yeah, he is in the movies.
Is he in the movies?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah, okay. He's in both of them, yeah.
Who plays him?
The guy.
Basically, he is a master of disguise.
The guy who played the mummy in Brandon Fraser's The Mummy.
Okay. Oh yeah, this kind of actually seems like a good character pick.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
they picked The Rock for Roadblock. I'll take that.
Yeah. I mean, that's casting is only one part of a movie.
Yeah.
I think you just could have got script and direction correct.
Yeah, exactly.
The direction might have been fine. I don't know. I watched the first one.
Let's talk about Zartan.
Let's talk a little more about things we hate. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about things we love. He's the leader of the Dreadnoughts, which also Dreadnoughts were always something that I just thought were super cool because they were like a heavy metal biker gang,
yeah,
with chainsaws.
Australian heavy metal biker gang, because everything was cooler from Australia in the '80s.
Exactly, I have to believe that they were probably inspired by Mad Max.
I would assume so.
Yeah,
the same way Rakondo was inspired by, I'm sure, Crocodile Dundee to some extent.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so like...
Ninjas and Australians were so cool in the 80s.
Exactly.
And G.I. Joe.
And you know what G.I. Joe had? Ninjas and Australians. So that's what made G.I. Joe so cool.
We love you, Australia, and all your scary beasts.
Yes. And your bikers with their chainsaw guns. Yeah, I never really quite understood like how useful that actually be against real guns.
Was it his buzzer?
I looked through their names.
Zartana was his sister.
His sister.
Yeah. And Xandar was his brother.
Yeah.
And then he had a daughter that I did not know about. Her name was Zanya.
I don't remember her.
So I vaguely, but I think
that was more of the like comic book.
That could be, yeah.
Comic book, yeah. But.
Yeah, I don't really remember too much more about.
Family likes their Z names. Thrasher was one of the other ones.
Yeah, that's right. And they had Zanzibar was another one.
What?
Yeah, this was one of the later ones. He had his own, what do you call those? I don't know if it's a pontoon boat. With a propeller on the back and. He was like a pirate. He was like a pirate dreadnought kind of.
I know. Okay. Yeah.
I immediately go to the water moccasin, but that wasn't it. But it was kind of pontoonish.
Yeah, and he looks, I guess, more speed. He looks like a crazy pirate guy.
Got it.
Okay. Basically, and then there was another one.
There's another one we're missing. Hold on.
Yeah.
I will look up dreadnoughts.
Because that's it.
Because there's the blonde hair one.
That was Buzzsaw.
Buzzsaw was. He was dark hair, wasn't he?
No, he had blonde hair.
He was the blonde guy with the ponytail that had the chainsaw.
Okay. Yes, yep.
All right.
Yeah. And there was one that had a torch, I think, was one of them.
Monkey,
yeah. Torch.
Torch, monkey wrench.
Monkey wrench. Yeah, because he had a truck. Man, there's truck a lot of people on here.
Ripper
was another Ripper. One.
I do not remember Road Pig.
Yeah. I think he was later.
He was must later. Have been later. He was one of the last.
He must have been Zanzibar.
Yeah, Zanzibar.
My gosh.
Yeah.
You oh, gosh. See I what remember I'm saying? Zanzibar.
Yeah, see?
There's Zanzibar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Zanzibar. I spent a weekend in Zanzibar once.
Was never quite the same.
Never the same.
But, yeah, I mean...
They weren't... The major ones were what? Buzzer, Monkey Wrench, Thrasher, and Torch?
Yeah. Those were the major ones. They were kind of, like, introduced with Zartan.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same time, so... Like, if you had, like, a heavy metal biker gang, Zartan was the leader of that biker gang, you know? But also, since he was a mercenary, Cobra Commander would often hire him to do whatever kind of crazy thing they need to have him do. Him being a master of disguise, you could sneak into places. He was also like a master of many mystical martial arts. Because I do distinctly remember at one point, too, in the comic book series, this is the Marvel comic book series that was out in the 80s or whatever.
Larry Hama.
Yep. What was that?
Larry Hama was the writer.
Oh, gotcha.
Of, I think, almost every issue of G.I. Joe.
I think you're right. I do remember Todd McFarlane, one of his first comics was a G.I. Joe comic book, too.
61, I think.
That sounds about
but
right.
But I think 61 got redrawn, but they didn't like his art.
Oh, for real?
And they had someone else come in and redo it.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Really?
So they released it at some point once he became popular as a reprint.
Oh, really?
With the original artwork, yeah.
Interesting. I did not know that. But, what I was going to get to, though, he was actually known for killing Storm Shadow's father in a comic book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with his bow and arrow.
Okay.
Being a master of mystical arts, not only a leader of a crazy
biker
gang.
Was it his father or was it the leader of the dojo?
It was, they were both the same. Shadow's father.
Hardmaster.
Yes. Yes, remember the Hardmaster.
They brought that up in the movie, too.
Did they really?
Yeah, they had the reason why Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow had a rift is because everyone at the monastery thought that
Snake Eyes. Everyone thought that Snake Eyes killed him, right?
Storm Shadow.
Yeah.
And so, Storm Shadow left and everything, and then it got resolved in the second movie where it was not Storm Shadow; it was actually Zartan.
Interesting. So they did. They stuck with that.
Stuck with that, and you know how
it was still bad.
It was still bad. It's like Storm Shadow. You know how Storm Shadow always jumped back and forth from whether he's on
good,
the
good
side,
bad.
And that's
what they.
Yeah. In the second one, he does that.
Oh,
so
okay.
He kind of forgives.
Yeah.
Snake Eyes. You know. And forget. And the RZA is in the second G.I. Joe movie. So, Wu-Tang Clan.
Who does he play? Who does the RZA
he
play?
He is one of the masters Hawk. at the he's one of the masters at the monastery. And he's the one that says,
why not?
Yeah, he's like, now you know the truth. And, they're like, Zartan's the one that killed your daddy.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. But, yeah, just to get back to Zartan, just one last time, I guess.
No, it's not one last time.
We got.
I like Zartan.
Yeah, I do, too.
I got to talk about Zartan for a while.
But the toy, too. The toy, the toy was awesome.
Yes.
Because, he was, one of the first figures that they had out that was kind of special that came with lots of stuff. And not only that.
It came with that little
weird
speeder
thing.
Swamp skipper.
Sort. And I think it's something like that doesn't really exist in real life, but still, it's really cool. But his skin also changed color, which was cool.
Right.
And it came with a mask, so, you could change his face.
Yeah.
So he looks that's when he's in disguise.
Now, wasn't he... One of his weakness was sunlight, and that's right why his toy changed colors because on the cartoon with sunlight.
Yeah, he was like a chameleon.
That's
and
right.
And when
the
sunlight hit him, he changed colors to like this greenish color, which happens in the to the toy.
Yeah.
This bluish green.
Yeah, that's right. That's a weird weakness
to have. It's like a vampire who has to go and disguise himself as other people.
Yeah. It's kind of like
the toy was awesome, though.
The toy was awesome. Yes. Yep.
And it was great because if you bought Zartan and you could play with him for a little while with Zartan, then you could consistently play with your other figures as Zartan.
That's right, because Master of Disguise.
Master of Disguise.
Right, yeah.
So because no one was buying that little mustached face. I think he had a mustache.
Because
he was still dressed with the hood. And
yeah, exactly. And the only thing that's different is your face. Come on, that's Zartan. You're not fooling anybody.
Look, everyone, I'm Irish now.
I have a mustache and a beard. So but,
yeah, he was pretty sweet.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorite characters from the G.I. Joe series. I almost went with Destro, but Zartan.
Destro almost made my list, as did Tomax and Zaymot, the Crimson Twins. Yes.
Those were also very good.
I like the idea of you punch one of them and the other one feels it too.
Yeah.
And the scars on opposite sides of the faces. Yeah. And
I remember for the long, like when the toys first came out, just having a debate with my friends. How do you, Tomax I get. How do you pronounce the name of the other one? What's that until they came out in the cartoon? Oh, it's Zaymot. Okay. Yeah. So
I wonder, like, when they got punished, like, if their parents gave them spankings, like, that would just be kind of...
Well, that's interesting.
who broke the vase? Oh, he did it. Well, I'm just going to spank one of you, both going to get it.
Yeah, that's
I have a feeling, though, in their history that the spankings wouldn't last long. Their parents were probably dead, and they were, like, trust fund children after them.
That's probably true.
Weren't they, like, aristocratic in some way?
I think so. There was some level of that, I think, in their background where they were, like,
I'll bet you they killed a lot of their nannies.
I'm sure.
The original Menendez brothers or something.
You gotta wonder, though, about their choice in attire, where they just kind of, like... basically we're in the same thing, but it was just kind of reversed. Like, I think one of them had a shoulder pad on her right arm, the other one had
the big silver one. And when you go back and look at the G.I. Joes, they look really awesome, but they're not very functional.
Once they
get past, like, the first wave of everybody wearing camo and stuff like that, even the first wave, Gung Ho.
Yeah.
Who goes into battle just wearing a vest and your Navy tattoo? Yeah.
Besides, B.A. Baracus, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, no, I got to agree with you there. Like, as far as military units go, I guess they're not,
Bazooka with a Giants jersey.
Yeah. I don't know, who was the one guy... He just had nunchucks.
Oh, that is Knuckle.
Are you talking about...
Sidekick.
It's barefoot, just wearing karate pants, I think, and nunchucks.
Yeah.
Fighting people with machine guns.
Exactly.
That doesn't seem like a good good choice.
Right.
So.
All right.
I guess that's Zartan. That's Zartan. People.
All right. We are now... At number two, the Deuce.
The Deuce.
And I'm going to go with, this is from the DC Comics, Stargirl and Stripes.
Ah.
Okay. Their first appearance was Stars and Stripes, issue 0 in July of 1999. A little background of Stars and Stripes. Stargirl... her character name was Courtney Whitmore, and Stripe. Let's start with Stargirl. Her powers were she was a superhero, but she didn't have like powers of her own. They came from the devices the weapons that she had. One of the weapons was a cosmic converter belt that gave her super strength. She also had a cosmic rod. Insert your own joke there. Which, interesting enough, she got the rod from Jack Knight, which, if you are a comic buff, which you are because you're listening to our podcast.
There you go.
That is Jack Knight is actually Starman.
probably one of the Starman. I think he is possibly Starman number 3 or 4.
Yeah, there have been a couple of different incarnations in it. I'm trying to think, because they look differently.
Yeah, too. they look differently. Yeah. He's more of a younger kid and got glasses. I'm thinking he's Starman 4. But that's where she got her cosmic rod from.
Not to be confused with the movie Starman.
Yeah. Yes. Which is a different...
Just like my dead husband.
Yeah. It's Jeff Bridges, right? Yeah. Later to become the dude.
But before was... showed up in Tron.
That's right.
And Stripe was actually a big, gigantic mechanical robot that was piloted by Stargirl's stepdad, which his name was Pat Dugan. So basically, like, the story of this is she finds these artifacts in her stepdad's, area or whatever, and there's a backstory to how he got all those things. And so she starts using them, and, you know, her stepdad is trying to, you know, have a relationship with her and everything because she's kind of put offish because they had to move from where she was to LA. And so she's missing her friends and everything. So she starts rebelling when she finds these artifacts and starts going around. So in order for him to keep an eye on her, you know, he gets out his old big gigantic robot machine, which he used in World War II. He was a pilot that was one of his things, was piloting a gigantic robot. And so, you know, they have adventures together, and then they end up joining the Justice Society and the Justice League, you know, to be a side characters and everything. I just always thought this was like an interesting group, because just the fact that, you know, you have a stepdad who's trying to relate, you know, to a stepdaughter that, you know, she's not feeling, you're not her real dad, but you're trying to have that relationship, and now you put in cosmic powers and a guy in a big gigantic, you know, robot.
Yeah.
I think it would be a pretty good movie if done right, DC Comics.
There you go.
and so I think that is my number 2, Stargirl and Stripe. I just like them. I think they could be developed into something even bigger if it's done right. I think the actress that I thought of to play Stargirl, if you ever seen The Fifth Wave, I cannot remember the actress's name.
I know who you're talking about.
But she's also in Kick Ass.
Yes, she
played Hit Girl. I think she was
Chloe Moritz. She plays Hit Girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chloe something.
Yeah.
But I know who you're talking about, though. Yeah.
But I think she would make a good Stargirl. So if, you know, DC Comics, if you guys are listening and this happens to go with this, remember, you heard it here first.
That's right.
From all of my issues.
I mean, you have these properties. Make use of them.
Exactly.
And make use of them right.
Yeah. Exactly.
I've heard early talks that Wonder Woman might be a mess.
I've heard that, too. I've been a little bit worried about that,
disappointing.
Too. Yeah. Because it looks so promising, but...
It does.
We'll wait.
I will not pass judgment until
exactly.
I see it.
Exactly.
And like That's I said, right. lower the expectations.
Exactly. That's right.
Always have a better experience.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Right. So, that's the deuce!
The deuce!
Are we on to my number, deuce?
We are on your...
My deuce. Shit choice?
Your...
We should save our worst of everything for the number 2 slot.
We should. This is our steaming number 2.
Steaming number 2. But you know what, though? Sometimes when you do have a number 2, you feel relieved.
And once you got it out of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Once you got it out, it's right. Relief.
There you go.
Well, I'm then going to get Mike Ehrmantraut out of me right now.
Feel the relief.
Mike Ehrmantraut is my choice for the deuce.
Such a good pick.
From Breaking Bad, and also Better Call Saul.
Yes.
Yeah. He's taken on a more prominent role in Better Call Saul, more so than on Breaking Bad. But the first time we see Mike is, I believe, season 2. when spoilers for early season stuff, when Walter allows Jane, which is Jesse's girlfriend, to overdose, and they call someone in to help clean up the scene before. He's almost like a Winston Wolfe from Pulp Fiction type character. If he just goes in, grabs the stuff he has to grab, cleans everything up, and then tells Jesse, you know, you were asleep, you woke up, she was dead, that's all you know. Repeat after me type thing. Yeah. So over and over again. And then we see him throughout the series. He takes on a greater role. He's kind of a hired hitman type person. Not really hitman, but a go and do whatever needs done type of guy for Gus Fring. And he just
always such a badass.
Played by Jonathan Banks. I don't want to forget that. Those twin hitmen come to town. He makes call, you know, and everything. Kills one of them in the hospital, I believe. And then you learn more about him after in Better Call Saul.
Yeah,
you learn he is a Philadelphia policeman.
Yeah,
who's was. Slightly crooked. All of the police force was slightly crooked. His son decides to follow in his footsteps, does not want to be on the take. Does not want to accept the money.
Wants to be a clean cop.
And he convinces him take the money. And it took too long. He takes the money, and then he gets killed anyway by the other cops. And so he waits.
Yeah.
He convinces everyone he's drunk. Goes in, starts talking to the guys, and being like, "I know you killed him, whatever." And they're like, "Oh, you're drunk. Let's just come on. We'll give you a ride home." And they take him off someplace to kill him, but he's not drunk, and he stashed a gun in their car. So he just
nice,
and he unloaded their guns.
Yes. It was pretty BA. Yeah. So, It's just a good character. That was the best thing about Breaking Bad was just so many of the characters. I could have picked three different Breaking Bad characters.
Yeah.
Or more.
He's probably definitely my favorite side character. Though. Yeah. Just so good.
You remove the major villains and Walt and Jesse from, you know. I like Badger too a lot though.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, Badger's really cool. Yeah, Badger is really cool. And even Gus Fring,
Gus Fring is amazing. Awesome. So excited to see him come back.
Yeah, I can't wait to see him in Better Call Saul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should say. Yeah. Not really come back. So to watch them introduce him on the prequel show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't think there's coming back from
what Face happened. Off. Yeah. Which even when that happened in Breaking Bad. First one, he's walking out of there. I'm like, no way. He's all, and then he turns his head, and you're like, oh, no way. So, I don't want to go too many.
Spoilers, yeah.
But if you haven't seen it yet, come on, people. What are you waiting for?
This is one of the best, in my opinion. I haven't watched The Wire yet, which is the only thing I've heard that might beat out Breaking Bad for best show.
I haven't watched The Wire either, but it's definitely probably the best show that I've. Always, never went any way where I thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Always surprised me. But the way it surprised me, it made complete sense. Mm-hmm. It was never something where I'm like, oh, it's too far-fetched. I can't believe they
did that. Has one of the most satisfying endings of a television show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
And I will still say Ozymandias is the best hour of television ever put to TV.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just the build-up. That's the thing with that show, too, is I just think it constantly just kept building.
Well, I like that they say Ozymandias is the way the show should have ended. They should have ended it right there, but they went on for two more episodes to give everybody exactly what they wanted from it.
Yeah,
so it ended perfectly. I should say it's not where it should have ended. It's where, realistically, it would have ended.
Yeah. Man, it's such a good show. I want to go back and watch it. You're just talking about it.
So that was my steaming number two.
Number two. All right. That brings us to my number two, which is another Transformer. This Transformer has appeared in the cartoons, comic books, even the movie. I'm not a big fan of the Michael Bay Transformer movies, so I'm not going to, but I'm not going to spend time criticizing them either, I guess.
I will.
There we go. Because they're just not good. I don't know. I know a lot of people seem to like them or love them for whatever reason. But to me, like when I see them, the robots fighting, it's just a big mangled mess that's on the screen.
I can't tell who's who.
Right.
Exactly.
Characters make the worst. Again, I watched Trans. We discussed this yesterday briefly. Yeah. I watched the first Transformers movie and left the theater thinking, oh, that was okay, that was pretty good. And then between rewatching it and then actually going home and thinking about it and things like that, I was like, well, that didn't make sense, and that didn't make sense, and that didn't make sense. Like, at what point do you see a giant all-metal robot and say, I'm going to slide under it and shoot it in the crotch?
Yeah.
Why would that even cross your mind?
Exactly. Never. Never. And it just, I don't know.
There's this thing we have here that you're trying so desperately hard to get because it's going to make you all powerful. I'm just going to stick it right in you. And that sounded dirty.
Yeah. In hindsight. Whoa.
You're looking for something all powerful. Let me stick it right in. Why would that kill him?
It brings
life to everything it touches, except living things, and those they bring death, and we have no reason to believe that prior to.
I don't even the way the characters behaved and reacted, I thought that drove me kind of a little bit crazy too. Mm-hmm. They drastically changed the way Bumblebee is. Why does he talk like a car radio?
He can't even talk.
It's just annoying. I mean, I get it. Like maybe in the first one where they said there was something wrong with his.
Did they never fix it? I don't remember.
I don't think they ever fixed it.
I watched the second one as well with the human that is a Transformer, which made no sense.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember the second one hardly at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw the second one, but I did go see the third one. The one that has the Transformer that I haven't named yet in it.
Oh, that's actually the fourth one.
Is it the fourth one?
Yeah, it's the fourth one.
Okay. And the Transformer that I'm talking about, I guess I should just mention it right now.
Oh, sorry, we digress.
We wanted to really let Michael Bay know what we thought about his crap. But and I'm not even haven't started talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles yet.
That's my childhood.
Yeah, that's like an abomination.
Yes.
The Transformer I'm talking about is Grimlock. You know, he is a Transformer. Okay, as a toy, he's a robot and a freaking dinosaur.
Can't beat that.
There's nothing better than that. I mean, you combine two awesome things.
Like pirate ninjas.
Exactly. Like pirate ninjas. Man. You know. Fantastic. It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Exactly.
Mixing them together. Oh, it's amazing. So, yeah. Having that character. And not only that, but the toy itself I thought was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he transformed well. This is one of the things we were kind of talking about. How some of them transform well and some of them don't. This, you know, Grimlock was awesome when he was a robot and awesome when he was a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Plus, he came with a freaking sword.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which was also awesome. And, Grimlock is... I don't know what else there is to say. Robot and a dinosaur.
He was pretty funny in Transformers the movie.
He was, yeah. And his character was enjoyable, you know, I thought too, you know, in those... But
Grimlock.
Me, Grimlock, you know, and just... All that kind of stuff. But I don't even think he spoke in the Transformers movie that he was in at all, did he?
Were you talking about the Michael Bay?
He gave up on it, yeah.
I gave up after three.
Fool me once.
Yeah.
I was like, my wife was like, well, we have to finish it. We saw the first two, so it's like, okay, I have to finish the trilogy. And then all of a sudden, it's like a fourth one. Like, nope, I'm done.
So yes, I saw one, skipped the other two. I figured I probably wouldn't need them for plot. Anyways, because, you know, plot doesn't matter.
I can imagine that you do.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't. So went and saw the one with that Grimlock in it. For the love of Grimlock, but it's still just...
Michael Bay a pass just in general because I understand he's trying to make movies that appeal to 13-year-olds and that he admits that his mission statement. And apparently it's working.
Yeah.
It's just I wish that he would make movies for 13-year-olds that weren't properties from when I was 13 or younger. Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Transformers.
And drastically change them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that gets me. It's like, you can make them.
You could remake them in a modern way.
Yeah.
That's not maybe as ridiculous as the old stuff was, but it's still, like, I don't need an all spark, and I don't need all that stuff. I'm fine with Energon.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. How's it? Yeah. What's how's the Allspark any less realistic than Energon?
Yeah.
Not really. It's not more or less realistic. I don't think so. I don't know.
It is the fact that he put balls on a robot.
That too. That too.
And hanging and balls. He peed.
And yeah, he peed on it. Yeah. That's,
and in the first and you're making a movie for 13-year-olds. Why do you need masturbation jokes?
Yeah, this is true.
Or the fact that a giant tail is coming out of a woman on top of your hero in the like the dorm scene where
that's
like,
the second one. That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, you were saying it. I'm like, I don't remember that happening, but yeah, that's the reason I don't remember.
There is a woman in the
dorm
and she is a robot. And that is something not from Transformers.
Yeah, and then you're just taking it too far. Then it's not
even Grimlock doesn't really look like a Tyrannosaurus. He's just shaped like him.
He's almost like some crazy dragon.
He's a robot, you know, and Swoop, they're robot. They look like robots or they look like vehicles or whatever. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Michael Bay.
He made The Rock, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
He made Bad Boys. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
So, the lesson here, Michael Bay, just create something new.
Make your original movies. They are awesome, and I like it. And I like your stylized quick shots in those movies.
There's no reason for us to hate you, then.
Yeah. And I'm sure he cares.
I'm sure he's,
what us three
on his giant yacht.
He sits here going, "How am I going to get that all my issues viewership?
Yes.
What can I do?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll send them Megan Fox."
Michael Bay, if you're listening.
Yes, if you're listening.
Sam has a great idea.
Oh man. Yeah.
So that was your deuce.
That was my deuce.
All right.
Sitting there.
Throwing the Grimlock out there.
Throwing the Grimlock out there.
Swirling around.
Grimlock sounds like the face.
The face you make when you're talking about it. Getting rid of that deuce. Making the Grimlock.
Alright. My number one. Number one.
The R. Kelly Memorial number one.
R. Kelly Memorial number one.
I'm trying to make that a thing. I'm trying to make fetch happen.
That's right. My number one comes from the Marvel Universe. And this team funny that they have their own comic, but they still seem to be like side characters.
The only comic book team to have their own comic book series and still be secondary players.
Exactly. And they've been around for a long time. Yeah. They are the Power Pack.
Yes. That was a deep pool too, kind of, because Power Pack was nowhere in my sphere of thought about this topic, but I like it.
The Power Pack first made their appearance on Power Pack issue number one in 1984. Mm. The Power Pack was a group of young kids, all brothers and sisters, who had powers. Let's start with the oldest is Alex Power. His superhero code name was Zero G. Yo. His ability was to control the gravity of himself and other objects. And so then he had his sister Julie Powers. Her code name was Lightspeed. She had super speed and flight. Had their little brother Jack Power. His code name was Mass Master. Can compress or decompress his body mass. And their baby sister, Katie Power, codename Energizer, can absorb and release energy. Mm. So, you know, the Power Pack, like I said, has been around since 1984. And basically, they've had several comic book series, but it doesn't seem to catch on as much. I mean, they've faced criminals. They've even defeated Dr. Doom.
There you go.
I mean, they helped the X-Men during the whole Massacre of the Moloch.
The Mutant Massacre. And I just want to share this. We talked once about how the first X-Men comic book I bought was the Prelude issue before the Mutant Massacre began. And then they came out with a chart in the back of the comics of, this is the Mutant Massacre. You know, follow these issues and you'll get the whole story. I followed that. And I bought every single one. Except I could not find the Power Pack issue.
Oh, man.
And it made me so angry because at that point, there weren't tons of comic book shops. And so I had to go around to like grocery stores and we had a news depot.
I remember the quests.
Yes.
And you just, you know, whatever, you'd hope that it would show up. Never saw it. I can't say that I've ever looked for it since either, but because it was the Power Pack in hindsight.
Yeah.
I can't believe that there's going to be that much massacre going on in Power Pack.
The Power Pack helping.
Yeah.
Exactly. Honorary member of the Power Pack is...
I was going to ask about this because I didn't... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
The honorary member is Franklin Richards of the Fantastic Four.
I didn't realize they were all... related, since I'd never actually read an issue of them.
Yeah.
And I would thought we were going to mention Franklin Richards, but then you said they were all brothers and sisters, and I was like, well, okay.
Yeah, he was an honorary member. He would show up on a few issues, and he was part of the Power Pack. They also had an alien that was like, he looked like a horse. His name was Coffee, K-O-F-I. He was from a different planet, and, you know, he became a member later on. He crash-landed, and he became...
Because they're all pretty young kids.
Yeah, they're all, like,
they're all way young.
Like, I'm going to say probably the oldest, maybe 10.
And they don't really have secret identities.
No secret identities. Everyone knows who they are and stuff.
Well,
and
they put their last name.
And the name, that's why I was going to say that. Because they have code names.
I've been bitten by Radioactive Spider. I'm Parker Man.
That's right.
And, you know, for the most part, they fight this alien race called the Snark or whatever.
The Snark.
Yeah, I think they're like lizard-like creatures that try to invade Earth. And so, you know, when the Avengers and everyone else is
reptilians,
busy.
Reptilians is what you're saying.
Yes.
Lizard people.
The lizard people. So the Power Pack, that is the Power Pack's major enemy for the most part. But, you know, like I said, they have fought others. They have
That's some ridiculously powerful powers to give to 10-year-olds.
It is.
You listed those off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... super speed and flight.
But you know what, though? If
gravity.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
If it's done right, I think... this Marvel could actually kind of make kind of a kid's movie, kind of like the Chronicles of Narnia kind of thing.
Well, they could, I mean...
Or Goonies, even. Or
Goonies,
like that,
even, because...
Like a, you know, Stranger Things.
Yeah, because I've read a few of the Power Pack. You know, they're kiddie, you know, they're little kids and stuff like that. But, again, they're, like you said, they're pretty powerful kids for being under the age of 10.
Well, and ultimately, comic books are kind of about that, you know, little kid fantasy of having powers. You know? And
look at Eleven from Stranger Things.
Exactly.
Yes.
In fact, you could just take the Power Pack and cast the cast of Stranger Things in those roles, and I would be fine with it.
Yeah.
That could be.
Have the same creative group together to make that movie.
Yes, Marvel, do you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. New Netflix series.
Yeah, that could be.
Right?
I'm kind of excited about The Runaways.
I am too. I want to hear more about it. Because I want to see what direction they go with that. Because that sounds pretty interesting.
Sorry, it's kind of reminded me of Power
Pack. No, it totally does too. Yeah, because it's kind of similar. Runaways is pretty popular, though. Probably more popular than Power Pack.
Though. They made Runaways a little older than 10.
Oh, did they?
They're teenagers.
Aren't they teenagers? Aren't they like the children of villains?
They are the children of villains.
Yeah.
They have their own powers.
Yeah.
That was a pretty cool series.
Interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped reading it a long time ago, but what I read up until when I stopped
I've heard it's really good.
Yeah.
I've never read it, though. But
it's good.
Why do I got Jane's got a gun in my head right now?
I don't know.
From the pain. Yeah.
All right, that's my number one.
I've got Cherry Bomb in my turn.
We're sorry that we just sang, by the way, but
I want it known that I did not sing. And you're welcome. So is this me?
It is you.
This is my R. Kelly Memorial number one.
R. Kelly Memorial number one.
I'm getting number one all over right now. I also am going to visit the Transformers universe.
Oh.
For my number one, and that is Starscream.
Starscream.
Particularly from the cartoon comic book and Generation 1 version. Voiced by a man named Christopher Collins, who's credited as Chris Lotta in many of the things. Starscream was a scientist and explorer before everything went down, and he actually worked with Skyfire, who's also Jetfire, during the golden age of Cybertron, and then somehow got separated from Skyfire and went to the Cybertron War Academy and ended up becoming part of Megatron's army. He actually created the Combaticons.
Oh, Bruticus. Really? What?
Yeah, he was, I believe it was a time when he was exiled from the army because he always constantly tried to take over the Decepticons. He was really sneaky
very
and
ambitious,
slimy.
Very
yeah,
ambitious,
but
yes.
Never really had the. He was brilliant, but never really had the forethought to think things fully out, and always got caught.
Yeah,
Especially
in Transformers the movie.
Yeah.
When he.
The animated.
The,
I was
the,
like,
the
I
good
don't.
Movie.
The only
the
one
movie.
That counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. He kicked Megatron and some of the others. Right out of that thing. But
Astro Train.
Out of Astro Train. Oh, I just want to talk about seeing Transformers the movie after watching the regular cartoon for years.
Oh, yeah.
Was just a kick in the teeth.
It was devastating.
You're watching, oh my gosh, they're dead.
Like within the first 5 minutes of the movie, all your heroes are dead.
Right.
Oh my
gosh, they shot Ironhide. They ran over one of the Insecticons' head. It was like one after the other falling.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what war must really be like.
It was horrible.
The thing I always wondered was like you know, they killed the Autobots, but when like Optimus Prime was going through and just shooting all the Decepticons. For some reason, they were just badly hurt. I'm like, you shot him in the face.
Exactly. It was like Omaha Beach or
right.
something.
Right, yeah.
He's
just going crazy.
Yeah.
But there was just, that movie was crazy. The stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
It was the childhood equivalent of being put in Negan's Circle.
Yeah.
It was, you just sit there. Yeah. Forced to watch all your friends die.
It's exactly what it was like. I remember I went and saw it with one of my friends, and my mom went with us. My mom fell asleep, but I remember looking over at my friend, and there was a tear coming down his face with the Optimus Prime scene.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get it. This is horrible.
Yeah.
You know? But it's a really good movie, though.
There
still.
Was good and bad.
Yeah.
Mostly the good comes from the soundtrack.
Yes, yeah.
You've got the touch.
You got the power.
Weird Al's on that soundtrack.
By the way, when I watched Boogie Nights for the first time, and he starts singing that song when he's trying to start a recording career.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I freaked out and was more excited about that than anything else in that movie. I was like, yeah!
Yeah, you got the touch. Yeah.
It wasn't Heather Graham naked or whatever. Yeah. I was... Though the scene with Dr. Octopus and the kid with the firecrackers that he's lighting them where they're trying to sell him fake drugs.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And he's sitting there in a bathrobe and his underwear, and he's singing Night Ranger, is one of the most... Have you seen Boogie Nights?
It's been so long.
That is one of the most intense scenes in a movie, because every time that those firecrackers are going off, you're like, is that going to be a gunshot? You know?
Yeah. That's a pretty good movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Starscream.
Yeah.
In doing research for this... I had so many questions answered that had bugged me for a long time. So when I was little, I had little guys this tall that were made out of clear plastic and had metal heads, and I always called them Micronauts. But I always looked at Micronauts, and none of the Micronauts looked like that. The comic book didn't, and whenever, you know, whatever. They were Micronauts, it turns out, but they were based on a Japanese series called Microman. Microman and another Japanese series of toys called Diaclone were all refurbished and turned into the first generation of Transformers.
Oh.
And this explained my age-old question of, why do we have cars that are this size and become robots this size, and then we have a gun that's so gigantic, like Megatron,
yeah.
or Soundwave the record player. And it turns out that since they were two different series, the Microman series was designed to have transforming robots that played with the Micronaut characters, the little Microman characters. So the Micronauts shrunk down in size, so they were supposed to be large robots to them, not to everybody else. So,
interesting.
So the Diaclones, these are the Diaclones that became Transformers. Sunstreak, Ironhide, Ratchet, Trailbreaker, Crosscut, Blue Streak, Hoist, Skids, Inferno, Smokescreen, Hound, Prowl, Jazz, Sideswipe, Mirage, Optimus Prime, Wheeljack, Red Alert, Grapple, Trax, Ultra Magnus, all the Constructicons, the Dinobots, Starscream, Thundercracker, Skywarp, and the Insecticons. So, with the exception of the Insecticons, all of those are just kind of like giant vehicle size become the robots. And then the notable Microman was Soundwave and his tapes. The Microbots, Perceptor.
Yeah.
Blaster, which... That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
The
yeah.
other tape player.
The other tape player, exactly. The good tape player.
Oh, yeah. Who's yeah. like red and...
Orange yeah. and yellow yeah. or red yeah. and yellow. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was That's good.
Awesome. Break dance and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So I never understood why the guns, you know, and why the, some of the things...
Yeah, they didn't quite match up they had the size to, and it scale. Didn't,
yeah. So, like, Megatron would transform and then Starscream would hold him.
Yeah.
But that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And that gun is so realistic. Do you know that it's illegal to carry that Transformer on a plane?
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it because...
Yeah. It looks like a
Megatron
real one.
Was
yeah.
really
yeah.
real.
It's pretty crazy.
When they re-released the figure as the gun,
yeah,
they had to put an orange tip on it.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I was wondering. Yeah, that's crazy. Because I was just thinking, because I know they've kind of reissued a lot of those old yeah. characters and stuff like that. It's interesting, too, just... listing off those that the Transformers that
yeah
they where they came from, I would have thought initially, like, because first, you know, Gen 1 didn't include like the Constructicons mm-hmm. or, you know, so it seems like
they said the first two waves were fully all from
that. Is crazy.
Yeah,
you know, that is really crazy.
And then I was talking before about Jetfire, which Jetfire and Skyfire, if you remember, looked exactly like the Robotech, mm-hmm. the Valkyrie from
yeah,
Robotech.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was because the same guys designed both of them, but they got released as the Valkyrie over in Japan before Jetfire got released in America. And then they were worried about getting sued, so they made them change the look for the cartoon and the other things.
Yeah, because we were kind of talking about this a little bit earlier. Because if you recall, like in the cartoon, Jetfire had like a kind of a more of like a human face.
Yeah.
And then the
toy had a like yeah. a blank... triangular red visor face.
Yeah, 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 yep.
It was, so, what's that? That was a sweet toy, too.
It was a sweet toy. yeah. Interesting. That's...
And then when I saw one in a comic book shop years later in the box, and I thought, man, this is worth a little bit extra money. I want to buy this. How much is it? And then it was somewhere between $500 and $800. And I yeah. went, I don't love my childhood that much.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a steep price tag there. All right. Well, I guess that brings us to my numero uno. The mine is from a TV show. A TV show that at one point came out as a movie first, but then got adapted to TV. And the TV show I'm talking about is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Another choice from Buffy.
My choice, though, is a character that you know, definitely a secondary character. But at the end of season 6, he kind of saves the day. And the character I'm talking about is Xander Harris.
Oh.
So he was the only one that was able to talk Dark Willow down after her, you know, she was basically kind of almost all powerful and ready to destroy the world and had, you know, occupied Buffy with fighting
trees
and and everything like that.
Occupy but, Buffy sounds like the worst protest ever.
It does. Yeah, Occupy Buffy.
Occupy.
But yeah, the but that is not my favorite episode or my favorite usage of the character. There's one episode that came out in season 3, and that's episode 13. And it pretty much entirely revolves around Xander. Do you know the one I'm talking about,
Sam?
Because
my character, number 3, is a strong part of this
one.
Yes,
sir. Yes,
Rock'em Sock'em.
That's right. That's right. That's why when you mentioned that, I was like, ooh, okay, we can call back to that. But yeah, the episode I'm talking about is called The Zeppo. And basically what ends up happening is early on in the episode, there's a big bad that's coming. These, I believe they're witches or something like that, demons or what have you. It doesn't really matter. But what they're trying to do is open the Hellmouth. So it pretty much occupies everybody except for Xander, because they're telling him they don't need his help and they're sending him on these like little things to kind of keep him away from the Hellmouth. So Xander, feeling kind of useless or whatever, he goes out and gets a card. But he runs into this this character whose name is Jack. And he was kind of, you know, bullying him earlier on in the episode. And they have some interactions and stuff like that. And at one point, they end up kind of, not, I wouldn't say becoming friends or anything, but like Jack is asking Xander for his help. And what it ends up being is, to make a long story short, Jack wants Xander to help him resurrect his friends who had died. And they were also like pretty much horrible people and everything. And so Xander gets wrapped up in the storyline where they resurrect these bad guys. And they're wanting to go around and getting into all kinds of havoc as the rest of the Scooby Gang are trying to stop this other thing that's happening at the Hellmouth. To make a long story short, though, again, Xander kind of steps up and finds out that these guys are planning to blow up the school where the Hellmouth's at. So as Buffy and the rest of them are fighting this other thing that's going on at the Hellmouth, these other guys, Jack and his cohorts in crime, are planning on blowing up the school with this bomb.
Okay.
So, but before we get to that part, let's talk about
Rock'em Sock'em.
Rock'em Sock'em. About what happens with Faith, because Faith is also helping them fight the big bad that's going on at the Hellmouth. But at one point, she has to leave as well. Meets up with Xander, and really meets up with Xander, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Because as you know, Faith gets aroused when she fights. And so when his danger is around, and, you know, she's like, you know what? I need to exercise these feelings. Hey, Xander.
Let's exercise.
Yes, let's exercise. Yeah. So they do a little one-on-one training, which happens to be Xander's first time on some one-on-one training.
Mm. There you go.
So yeah. Rock'em Sock'em.
Rock'em Sock'em. Yeah, so...
We were all Xander Harris at that moment. we were all pulling for him.
And that's probably why, you know, that character is just, you know, the things he gets wrapped up in.
Really, all you needed to do was tell that one story, and that puts him number one on all of our lists.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But then ultimately, he ends up stopping those guys from blowing up the school. He basically stands up to Jack, makes him defuse the bomb because he's, you know, blocking him from leaving the place and telling him, in a nutshell, that he's got to defuse the bomb or they're both going to die in the explosion.
All right.
So he gets him to defuse the bomb. Xander actually really ending up saving the day also But the rest of the Scooby Gang having no idea that he has done all this stuff. And at the end of the episode, he just decides not to tell anybody anything. Mm-hmm. And there you go.
Yeah.
So, Xander Harris.
Xander Harris.
Good choice.
Definitely,
good choice.
Definitely one of my favorite characters on Buffy. And I love that series so much. So
yes.
I've rewatched it many times.
It's the Joss Whedon character.
It is, yeah. Joss Whedon said it
was kind of like he wrote himself as that character.
Yeah. Played by Nicholas Brendon.
Yes. Yes.
So. All right. I guess that kind of brings us to the end of this episode. I don't know. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we sign off?
No.
Oh, all right.
I think we're good.
I think we're good. All right. Well, catch us on Facebook at All My Issues. Our website, allmyissues.com. On Twitter at All My Issues.
Email us at allofmyissues@gmail.com.
Tell us what you think. Tell us what you think about our list. And
any topic ideas you would like us to cover. I guess we'll go from there.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Later.